Well, hello everyone. Thank you for joining us again for another Basic Conversation. And Father Basic, today we're going to continue our delving into the life and approach of Pope Leo.
Leo the 14th, yeah.
And today we're going to really focus on the decades that he spent in Peru and the impact that had on him as a person, priest, and obviously now as a...
Yeah, we're on Peru for sure.
We're on Peru.
Yeah,
and then
which is amazing in itself how important that is. So we know that Pope Leo, who became Pope Leo, spent about 20 years or more in Peru. And what's really important about Peru is that it's the birthplace of liberation theology. Now I'm going to have to explain that. Yeah, but it's extremely important in understanding Leo, so we need some background. Liberation theology, Peru. So let me try to do it this way. When I studied at Oxford, I did Karl Rahner's theology, you know, and it was in my bones and blood, and it's in everything I do. My last lecture, I never mentioned Karl Rahner, and somebody said, well, I was very disappointed. I said, well, I don't have to mention him. He's in my bones and blood. I remember the last time I saw Rahner. I said goodbye to him in Munich. I said, Pater, I want to thank you for enabling me to be a Catholic priest with intellectual honesty. Very important to me with intellectual.
What did you mean by that? Intellectual.
It means that I didn't have to put my brains on hold to be a Catholic theologian. I could embrace the world, embrace problems, and so on. And frankly, that has worked well for me. You know, it was great. It helped me to deal with students who are trying to figure out if they still held their Catholic faith or not, or deal with faculty members who were trying to make sense out of their early training. People are trying to say, can I be a Catholic or not? Or does it make sense? How do I explain it? How do I talk to others about it? So it proved to be very effective for me. Now, there was another guy who went to Europe and studied by the name of Gustavo Gutierrez. Gustavo Gutierrez. And he went to and studied like the same kind of theology that I studied. And was thoroughly imbued in that. And he came back to Lima, Peru, where his home diocese was. And what he found was that that theology didn't work for him. And in one of the great insights of the 20th century, well, I'm talking about Gutierrez, I should say, I didn't meet with him personally. He was teaching up in Michigan, and Michigan University, the religious studies program, got arranged a one-on-one dinner with Gutierrez so we could meet each other and talk and so on. So I did get to know this fellow. He's deceased now, the father of liberation theology. So he comes back and he's doing what I'm trying to do, and it's not going anywhere, not helping. And he, in one of the great insights of the 20th century, he figured out why. And the reason was because the people in his parish were not non-believers. They didn't need to be proved that God exists or anything, or that the church is worthwhile. They were treated like non-persons. Key, they were treated like non-persons. And so the job of liberation theology for Gutierrez became to empower them, to help them become more confident of themselves, so that they would become not spectators to life, but participants, take hold of their lives, empower, big word for Gutierrez. And so when he started doing that, it worked really well. So he's in Lima, Peru. That's what we're talking about, Lima, Peru. So that liberation theology took over in Lima, Peru, the birthplace. And Lima, Peru, people were Catholic. I think it's like three-fourths Catholic or something. Mm-hmm. And so he's trying to take hold of their own lives. So that is the milieu in which our friend Leo XIV did all of his pastoral ministry. he was there for two decades. That's when he performed as a priest and took care of the people and so on. So he was living that liberation theology, and he was finding ways to empower his people in Peru. And he did that. He lived with another Augustinian priest, and together they were running parishes. So how were they running parishes? They put them in segments, and they tried to get them into smaller groupings, and they very often got women involved. The big thing in a parish, they would set out zones, and in those zones they would create communities, and very often they appointed women, empowered women to run those communities and so on. There is other priest friend, Father Lydon, said that when they were there, they were immersed in the life of the people. At one point, they got word from our State Department that it wasn't safe in Peru for Catholic priests. It wasn't safe, and that they should get out. But Pope Leo XIV didn't. He showed great courage, said, "We're going to stay with our people." It continued to minister. It was a time of great upheaval. There was a dictator took over, all kinds of terrorist things going on. It was a tough situation. But he refused to leave, so courage for Leo XIV with the people there continue to remember. So...
And he was serving an incredibly poor area, very marginalized.
Yep.
And he...
They established soup kitchens. They established ways to help the people feed themselves and take care of themselves. They were on the ground. They were doing real ministry. So his real ministry for 20 years was in Peru. And he recognized this in his inaugural address. You know, whenever the Pope first appears, he comes out on the balcony at St. Peter's. Remember, Pope Francis came out and said, "Please pray for me." The world never forgot it. So Leo comes out. He's talking in Italian. And he's fluent. I mean, Italian, Spanish, German, French. Linguist. I mean, brilliant man. And he's talking in Italian to this big crowd in St. Peter's. And suddenly he stops and he said, "Now I want to remember..." And he begins to speak in Spanish. And he remembers his people in Peru in the Diocese of Chiclayo, which he often referred to. And he sends special greetings to them, showing his appreciation for what he did get out of that. And the people in Peru have just gone crazy over him. The president said woman president they have now, it's a stable situation, said he by choice and by conviction, he's a Peruvian. So they think of him as, and he recognized that publicly. My Diocese of Chiclayo, it's got the same letters as Chicago. That's what he said. It's from Chicago to Chiclayo. So he's steeped in liberation theology. Liberation theology says important things like, well, who is God? The big thing for the Gutierrez, I told you I met with him, I say that. He's a short man, had polio when he was little, walked with a limp, but, sharp as a tack. He's deceased now, last few years. I was taken with his conviction, his dedication, and his quick mind when I talked with him one-on-one. And he got a feel for this is his life. So see, he founded liberation theology, so now we have a theology liberation of women or of gays or anybody who's disadvantaged, dispossessed, marginalized, and so on, need to take hold of their own life. Remember the pastoral letter that I wrote for the American Bishops on Campus Ministry, Empowered by the Spirit. It's a kind of liberation theme, empowered. Take holy on life. Don't be a victim. Don't be a victim. Be an active participant in your life. So that's background. He's steeped in liberation theology and so on. And they lived a simple life, Leiden and him, live with the poor. So one of his buddy who said, we never saw a tennis racket. Well, it's known that Leo not only roots for the White Sox, but he likes to play tennis. And he said, we never saw a tennis racket. We were with the poor, taking care of the poor. We lived with them, and the people recognize that. So, are you following me?
I'm with you.
We got liberation theology, yes. And it's in his bones and blood. So when you think about what's Leo going to do, he's going to empower people. He's going to organize. He wants to organize parishes into blocks and groups, and he wants women to have power. And
he gets promoted, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I often think that Pope Francis, put him into the position, appointed him to important. He made him the bishop of the diocese there. And then he makes him the head of a congregation of the bishops. So he got to know everybody around the world. It's almost like he made sure his successor was going to be Leo. That's how I think of it anyway.
Let me throw a couple of these statements at you and you react to them, okay? Peru taught Pope Leo XIV to be a pastor before an administrator.
Good, yeah, yeah. Yes. And I think that's so important, just generally for pastors. You know, we're supposed to be spiritual guides. We're supposed to be helping people. One time I remember I told a young woman, go to your pastor and see if he'll be your spiritual director. And she came back and said, but he said he doesn't do that sort of thing. He fixes the roof and takes care of the budget. So if pastors aren't good at spiritual direction, they should have that available for their people. So now go ahead, I'm sorry.
Other people, other Augustinians that worked with him in Peru described him as someone who got his hands dirty, and he had a preference for accompanying people rather than governing from a distance.
Yeah, good. I mean, it's great stuff. That's Pope Francis again. Pope Francis was always walk with the people, be with the people, yeah.
Yes, cool. This is 20 years plus in Peru. He learned to listen to ordinary people.
Yep. I mean, it's so much what I learned in my own ministry over the years. I always say the people in Sandusky, Ohio taught me how to be a priest. That was because
that was your Chick-fil-A-O.
Yeah,
parish, right?
That was my situation where I was in a situation where I was needed to listen to people. And I found out if you don't have to figure out what you're going to say next, you can be a better listener. And so I always say that people. So, yeah, he said, you know, he could say the same thing. People in Peru taught me how to be a pastor. He called Peru his second homeland.
Right.
Yeah.
He also, when he was there, he learned that the church was already very much participation-oriented, shared responsibility and consultation, and also emphasis on lay leadership. Like he landed in a place that already embraced that.
Yeah, it was already influenced by Gutierrez and by liberation theology. And he was smart enough to learn from it and not try to go in and impose his Western American U.S. approach to it. So, Brad, I want to go to the idea that this made him especially open to immigrants. So he himself was an immigrant And so he has a special feeling for immigrants in the United States. And he did something that I think is important to remember. So he's trained now, and now he's the Pope. You know, and now he's thinking about the United States and the plight of the immigrants there in the United States. He's thinking, this isn't good. Oh, he has an innate feeling for them.
And he got that because when he was in Peru, Venezuela, there was an onslaught, 1.5 million Venezuelans that came to Peru because of conflict in that country.
Important point, yeah.
That was his empathy. That was
He wanted to be welcoming to them, yes. Right? You welcome the stranger. Probably we had to take care of the widows, the orphans, and the aliens. Jesus said you should welcome the stranger. I was a stranger and you took me in. The liberation themes are very much the God of the Exodus. Who is God? God is the one who freed a whole people, the enslaved people, the Israelites, from slavery and brought them into the promised land, given political, social, and economic freedom. That's who is Jesus. In Luke 4, it says, Jesus, the liberator of captives, came to preach the good news to the poor. It's such a strong message. And that's all part of liberation theology, is all part of what is in Leo's DNA, I believe. And we could see that in the way he thought about the immigrants in the United States. Let me go back and set the scene for him in the United States, being Leo and the liberator. The American bishops in their November meeting of 2025 issued what they called a special message. They hadn't done it for 13 or 14 years. And it required a vote of the conference. Our bishops are all part of the USCCB, United States Council of Catholic Bishops. They issue statements periodically. And they've been divided. Should President Biden be able to go to communion or not? They have different viewpoints. They have different viewpoints on almost everything. But at their annual meeting, November meeting 2025, they voted almost unanimously to support the immigrants. The vote was like 216 to 5. That never happens in the conference. It's so split. 200 to 5, almost unanimous, saying, we support our immigrants, you know. They said things like, it's not contradictory to say we want to have strong borders and protect our country and kick. They're not incompatible. We can have strong borders, but we also can have respect for the immigrants and so on. So they wrote this letter. It's a marvelous statement, and they express all of their emotions in the letter. We as a bishop, we're dismayed, we're chagrined, we're upset, it's sad. We're sad that parents can't take their kids to school because they're afraid when they go out they're going to get detained. I mean, they come right out and say it. Mass deportation is immoral. It's wrong. It's not right. It's not Christian. It goes against what Jesus taught us. Welcome the stranger. And they went on to say, remember, our immigrants have been important. Well, we're all immigrants, right? Almost all of us. The GI Bill for Catholics in the United States was made all the difference in the world. So many Catholics who were struggling, and they how were they going to get out of it and so on. The biggest thing that happened was the GI Bill, which let the veterans go to school, get a degree, move into the suburbs, become affluent people, become people who could make a difference, leaders in the political world, eventually a president, John Kennedy. So this special message, which they had only done once before years ago, is put out there, and it's a powerful message. And you know, they see, we can't have violence in our country. We have to find ways to get along. We have to work together to improve our situation. And they say we're dismayed that it's at these detention centers. They're terrible. Detention centers, people are not treated in a human way. This is all special message, right? You following me?
I'm with you.
And we're going to get to Leo XIV on this. So the special message is we can't get in there to say mass. And when we've visited detention centers, the situations are squalid. They're not treated with dignity. And then they go on to say, remember, the immigrants have done so much to make this country what it is. And that is so true. And we should respect that and honor all that they have done. So we had this special message that was in their November meeting in 2025. So now here's Leo figuring out what's he going to say about all this. And what he says is interesting to me. Listen to what the American bishop said. Pay attention to it. It's great stuff. They know what they're talking about. I encourage all people, not just Catholics, but all people of goodwill, pay attention to what the bishop said. Mass deportation is not moral. It's immoral. Doesn't respect the people, and so on. So this was a tactic that Francis developed, his predecessor, Pope Francis, who often quoted local bishops, like he quoted the Japanese bishops, or quote Australian bishops or something. Because he often said, this is Pope Francis now, said that the Pope doesn't know everything about everything. And he would quote, you know, the Japanese bishops know what they're talking about. So in this case, this is what Leo did. He did the Francis kind of thing. He says, I'm not going to write my own statement about mass deportation. I'm going to affirm their statement. And their statement fundamentally said it's immoral. Mass deportation is immoral. And there's no contradiction between having secure borders and protecting the country and having respect for the immigrants. Leo's strategy was, yeah, they got it right. I don't need to write my own thing. I want you to follow what they say. And that, I like that idea. He said, not just Catholics, but all people of goodwill can learn from what the special message said.
And he obviously took some heat for that, right? Because it's obviously a political hot button issue in our country.
Yeah.
Some people cheered him, other people jeered him.
Yeah. Well, Pope Leo said he's going to preach the gospel no matter what. And he's going to. So he's, Brad, when you think, where's this going to go? How's Leo going to? He's going to be on the side of the dispossessed. He's going to speak up for the people in Peru, and like he learned there. So I look for him to continue that. He now has liberation theology in his bones and blood. God of the Exodus, Jesus came to liberate the captives, preach the good news to the poor. We can count on him being on the side of the dispossessed as we move forward. And in that, you know, that thing about listen to your bishops, that's a message for all Catholics, you know, in the United States. Listen to the bishops. I mean, a lot of times our bishops get criticism. We know that. And the bishops' conference is divided, and people wonder, why don't they do this? Or why don't they do that? Or not? But here we have something concrete, like how are we going to help empower others? You know, I could imagine somebody listening to that and writing their congressperson. Like, we don't want that detention center in our state, no. Or we want detention centers to be able to have mass there for our people. Also, I think we could all get a lesson from that. You know.
How about we end with this statement? Pope Leo has said that Jesus was a migrant.
Well, yeah.
That's pretty powerful, right?
Oh, it is, and it's often used. You know, that's the story of Joseph in the dream having to take Jesus out of Israel. Yeah. I mean, it's biblical. You can look at the Bible that he and his mother and father were immigrants, and they were fleeing because of the terror that was afoot for them. So they were, Joseph followed the angel and took to Egypt. And then God then brought them back out of Egypt and back after Herod was no longer a threat to them. Let's go back to that courage thing. Leo did not leave Peru when the State Department suggested he should get out. He showed courage and he stayed, and that's why the people there love him. What did the president say? He's a Peruvian in content and courage. Those aren't the right words. I'm forgetting. He's a Peruvian by choice and conviction. That's it. President of Peru said he's a Peruvian by choice and consent.
What do you think? Did we cover it all?
I don't know. Did we?
I think we did. It gave a perspective of the impact that Peru has had on both Leo as a person, a priest, and now as a pontiff, and then obviously the immigration piece.
Yeah. And this is important for looking forward. I mean, there's no doubt he's steeped in liberation theology. And I think you can see that he will manifest that more and more as he goes along. So let's raise up Pope Leo XIV as a sign of hope in our world today. We need hope in difficult times, in challenging times. We need God to have Christian hope, which is based on the conviction that God is running the world. And that Jesus, the liberator of captives, continues to look out for all of his people. And we have a church now, a Catholic church, that has got the job of empowering the weakest and most vulnerable in our own society. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Father Basie.